Welcome to a slightly unusual episode of Speak Up Radio's podcast. A few months ago, I had the pleasure of speaking to Homera, a volunteer at Cassettner, about the work the organisation does promoting arts and heritage for people in the Syrian diaspora. We had a wide-ranging discussion about the value of history, place and identity to mental health, and shared some very lovely pieces of art. Unfortunately, as you might have guessed from this intro, we had a recording issue with the first half of the interview, which made the second half make a lot less sense. Homera wasn't available to re-record the first half, but I recently spoke to Juan, the founder of Cassettner, about what the organisation does and how it supports people. Today's episode will therefore first include mine and Juan's interview, and then pick up with a piece of music called A Scottish Candiza. Today I am joined by Juan at Cassettner. Juan, could you briefly introduce yourself and what you do at Cassettner?
Well, my name is Juan Delgado. I'm originally from Spain. I'm a moving image artist, a filmmaker. I work with collaborative projects of social impact. I'm based in London, and in 2013, I set up with other people this organization, Cassettner. Cassettner basically aimed to bring the displaced community of Syrian diaspora together. We focus on preserving and documenting the intangible heritage of this community.
You mentioned intangible heritage. I just wondered if you could talk about what you meant by that.
Intangible heritage is something that we cannot see, we cannot touch. Basically, it's referring to memories, it's referring to different assets that are connecting us with our cultural identity, meaning proverb, song, basically memories, the memories that are taught by our grandparents, memories of things that are connected with the cultural identity, that because of the war and the forced displacement, might have an impact and becoming in danger of disappearing.
Thank you. Could you give us some examples of the events and activities you do?
We do connect with Syrian diaspora cross border in many, many countries, people who are displaced internally in the country, but also who are settling across the UK in small villages, in Somerset, in Midland, in Scotland. We've been talking to Syrians who are reallocated in a small island in the west coast of Scotland called Isle of Bute. So basically, we are connecting with Syrians all over the country and trying to reach them out and bring them to this virtual platform, which is nice, and engage them and help them, you know, to preserve and document the memory. These memories sometimes are not something that people value because it's not a tangible object. It's something that is very intangible, right? So what we're trying to do with Cassettner is to engage with this community, a very diverse community. There are 50,000 Syrian saints in the country. There's a high percentage of them are carrying a traumatic experience they've been through, which is not visible or apparent to us. So we're trying to, the different activity we do storytelling workshop, we do presentation in universities. Basically, we organize events like the one in Westminster Library, in which we are inviting a poet from Damascus, a musician from Aleppo, and a Kurdish writer to share the work with a wider audience, not only Syrian, but also whoever is interested in this culture.
So, Juan, you mentioned trauma. I wondered if you could talk any more about how your work supports people's mental health.
Well, we are not therapists. We are not people from the medical profession. But we do understand that one of the main powerful tools to help people suffering from isolation and mental health is the ability to listen, the ability and the capacity to actively and meaningfully listen to the person who sometimes say, I have nothing to say, or whatever I want to say has no value, or I feel like I'm not connecting with the community or the place where I'm living. So basically, Kuchetna is trying to find different tools. One of them is to actively listening and engage with people, not to directly talk about trauma, but to indirectly talk about other things that can build up a trustful relationship, a meaningful relationship. People can open up their heart and talk about all the difficult subjects like the trauma that they might have come, might be gone through in the past, yeah. So we've done a storytelling workshop, for example, a residential storytelling workshop in Nottingham. In this storytelling workshop, we brought together members of the local community and newcomers. For 3 days, they engaged on what we call story from a treasure. People were bringing an object that has a meaning to them, an object that the value for them because it's connected with an experience or a memory that is dear to them. And basically, these people are talking about the object, and the object will be the departing point to develop a story. So this story doesn't have to be directly connected with the trauma, but basically through the different exercises that we do in this storytelling workshop, which is a bilingual storytelling workshop, meaning that people are able to speak in their own language, Arabic, and also in English. We got a facilitator, and the facilitator is translating from one language to another, with a unique technique that is very, very positive. It had a very positive impact. So storytelling has been one of our more powerful assets, if you like, to help people who are on risk of social exclusion, or people who, they might feel difficult to negotiate the mental health issues because of the cultural background, because they might not been able to speak the language yet. So, we're trying to help them and to make this reality visible to, the wider community.
Giving a platform to people to share their stories and art seems to be a big part of the work that you do. Who is your intended audience for this art and these stories?
The stories are published on our website, both in English and Arabic. It's becoming like a digital archive that will be a repository archive at the University of East London. But we don't want the digital archive yet to be only for researchers and the academia. We want our archive to be open and available to everyone. These archives basically are memories written and produced by the Syrians themselves. We read these stories out in universities because we want young students from different universities in Manchester, in Leeds, Sussex University, Newcastle. We've been reading some of these stories to a wide audience of students. And we like them to engage with these stories and to bring them or to give them the opportunity to learn more about who the Syrians are. I mean, we understand that mainstream media not necessarily are giving the full picture of who are these people. Like, for example, we know very little about the Ukrainians, or sometimes the news are focusing on a particular sector of the population. But we sometimes don't have the opportunity to hear the story from the people themselves. So basically, we want to give the mic, we want to give the platform to the Syrians so they can tell the story themselves. And basically, we channel this in different avenues to make the story available as wider as possible.
Do you have any examples of the kind of stories people tell?
We focus on one of the things that we avoid definitely is to talk about politics. We don't want to talk about politics. We understand that other people, other initiative, other organization are already doing that. We understand that our approach is to bring people together, to be inclusive as much as we can. So we focus on the heritage, the culture, and the art. We understand this topic can bring people back together to talk and give the foundation so people later on can talk about other things, more difficult topic. But first, we had to really create a very solid foundation in which people are trusting each other so they can share the stories. Some of the stories are memories of experiences of displacement, stories that happened back in 2013, 2014, when people were crossing borders. Some of the stories we read in the news, but the stories are not told by the people themselves. You know, it's a journalist that go there and tell the story, the account of what happened. But what we're trying to do is to give the space for the person to tell a story of what happened to her or him. And then we make that story available on the website. So, for example, there is a very powerful story of a young man who was crossing the border between Syria to Turkey, from Turkey to Greece. And he left behind his little girl, a 2-year-old daughter. When eventually this person reached Denmark, where he based now, I told him that it would be very, very good to have the story written. I remember he saying, Juan, I'd rather forget this experience. It's a very, very painful memory for me. I insisted to him, I said, I know how painful this memory is, but I also think it's very, very important to preserve for your daughter. When she grow up in Denmark, you know, maybe in 10, 15 year time, she will read the story, the memory from her father, how they ended up in Denmark. So he agreed to write the story, and it's one of the most powerful stories we got in our website. So when we have an opportunity and read some of the stories to symposia about exile, digital archive, anything that the academia might be interested in, we read the story to the student, to the researcher. So we understand researchers are interested in data for their own research, but we're also trying to make them aware that the data are stories from humans, human people who, you know, they can be living in a very difficult situation. So we're trying to visualize and to highlight something that it might not be apparent to them. So we also do interviews. We interview artists, we interview writers, we interview Syrian or people who identify as Syrian heritage, not only in the UK, but also in other countries. And we're trying always in our interviews to focus on the positive aspect of this situation in which the artist is displaced. He become a refugee in this country, and she or he is now in a position to contribute to the culture and the art in the country. So one of the things that we are doing at the moment is talking to the National Archive and the Heritage Fund, because we understand that whichever these artists are producing in the UK is very much part of the UK heritage. So we're trying to build up a common ground in which artists from Syrian heritage can be seen as part of the UK heritage, so to speak. Why are we doing this? We're trying to challenge perception people or society as a whole might have toward the migrant or refugees, who are people who are not able to include themselves in the new society. We're trying to challenge that perception, this paradigm, and give example of, you know, how these artists are contributing to the overall musical, artistic, and cultural landscape of the UK. We're doing this in Sweden, we're doing this in Turkey, we're also highlighting people, Syrians who are in Spain. So basically, we're trying to keep an eye on the international landscape and see how the displaced community are so eager and willing to contribute to the society of the country where they are settling.
It sounds like you have a lot of events all over the world. Are you doing anything in particular in London?
Well, in London, we are organizing an event in collaboration with the Westminster Music Library. This is a gig we are organizing for May the 7th. And we bring in an artist, violinist, Basil Hariri. Basil is going to be performing with his music to an audience. It's an open event to everyone. We're also going to be, for the first time, listening to the poetry of Dr. Daiham Mufti, who is a poet based in Richmond. And for the first time, Daiham is reading out his poetry in public. Also, we will have Haidam Hussein, who is a novelist. Haidam is going to read an extract of his new book, For Those Who Remain. It's a beautiful book based on his experience of coming from a town called Amuda. And Amuda is a city in Syria that was visited by Agatha Christie. So he's responding to the writing of Agatha Christie's experience of being in that city 100 years ago. So this is one of the events that we are producing. We've also been in part on a festival in Bradford-upon-Avon near Bath. Bradford-upon-Avon is a beautiful village where 200 Syrians have been allocated. So we were part of a music festival. We were reading some of the stories from our website to a local audience. So we always very keen and willing to engage the work we do with anybody, being London, Manchester, whatever else we feel that might be beneficial for the local and the newcomers.
Thanks, Juan. How can people find out more about Cassetta's events?
Well, we got a website, which is stand for the name, Kisetna. Kisetna is Kisetna.com. So Kisetna in Arabic means our story. This is the website where we publish our content, the news, the activities. It's a very beautiful website that we've been uploading on regular basis. It's also a good connection with the social media, our Facebook, Instagram, where we keep up to date the different activities that Kucetna is involved.
Brilliant. Is there anything else that you'd like to share today?
We are a volunteer-led grassroots organization, meaning that for 9 years we've been producing content, digital content, and disseminate and expand this content to audience across borders. We understand that this is a beautiful initiative that is possible with the generosity of our volunteers that I want to highlight. Kucetna is the result of a culture of solidarity, compassion, empathy, something that is so needed these days. Our presence is a platform, it's a virtual platform, and we also do physical events. We welcome people to join and connect with us on our website through our social media. Invite them to come to our event in May the 7th at the Westminster Music Libraries, which is near Leicester Square in central London. Thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about Kucetna.
Thank you, Juan. Lovely to talk to you. Take care. That was Basel Hariri. So that song is it Alala with Lala? Am I saying that right? Have you got the title of that song up in front of you? So a Scottish Candiza, which is very exciting. Have I said the title of that song right, Homera? I'm just trying to get it up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get it up. No just worries, give me no a worries. Second.
So thank you so much for sharing that with us. I thought that was really, really lovely. Really lovely to listen to. And just absolutely fantastic little piece of music. So I thought what we were talking about before touched on some really, really interesting kind of topics. I was going to ask you, so obviously a lot of what you do is about heritage and preserving heritage, even heritage which is quite hard to preserve, you know, so things which are, as you said, intangible. What do you think the link is between heritage and mental health? So talking about heritage, exploring heritage and mental health.
It's something that grounds us, you know. It's something that's part of our past, it's part of our future, it's part of our present. Mm-hmm. So I feel like heritage is really important for mental health and well-being, because it provides a sense of yourself. It reminds you of who you are, it reminds you of what your values are, and being able to share these values with others is really important, because then you can find some common ground, you can find a way of, you know, find some way of being inclusive and collaborative. And, you know, Basil's song, as you can see, it's called Alala Walala, and it's a a Scottish Candesa. So Alala Walala and a Scottish Candesa together, it's sort of, it's a mixture of his own heritage with the heritage of, you know, Scotland. Mm-hmm. And it's captured beautifully in this song. I mean, the music is just very, very poignant and very expressive. And again, heritage is not necessarily just where you're from, who you are. Like, it's also this creativity within you. And I think that it definitely links to mental health in that sense, because the creativity that is instilled in all of us as human beings can be expressed, and expressing this helps with our mental health and well-being.
I really like what you were saying about the mixture, you know, so Basil's song is a Scottish Candesa, and that heritage is something that can change as you move around. You can pick up different bits of heritage, rather than there just being one heritage which you've got to go back to. Actually, like, people have heritages from all over the world, you know, and that's something which people are, you know, so he's just as entitled to play a Scottish influenced song as anybody else, which I think is really, really, really wonderful. I also liked what you were saying about heritage being something that grounds people as well. It does help you to understand where you've come from, and maybe it helps put things that are going on at the moment in perspective. So I really like that. So I just wondered if you had any other projects which you wanted to tell us about, maybe things that which are slightly more to do with mental health.
So a lot of our projects, they're not specifically targeting mental health, but the projects themselves help with mental health. Mm-hmm. It's a way of, you know, using the events and the exhibitions and the, you know, the festivals that we're part of to showcase the work of people who have been struggling, who have had difficult times, who are processing trauma and PTSD, and, you know, it's sort of help. It's this whole
Mary,
project,
your
this whole organization is helping move.
Sorry, your audio's gone a bit out.
Okay. Yeah. So can you hear me now?
Yeah. Okay. Hear you now.
So what I was saying was that it also, these projects, these events, exhibitions, etc., helps to move the narrative away from the politics linked to, you know, refugees and migrants. Stories for the future, and that's why when I say that our projects are, they're not necessarily entirely focused on, you know, oh, this is a mental health project that we're doing as part of this organization. That's not what we do. What we do is we do a project that's, you know, tied to something that preserves memories, that preserves heritage, that shares, you know, this humanity and this language of humanity that we talked about earlier, you know, this sharing this culture of empathy and compassion. And, you know, our events and our projects are there to help inspire people despite the challenges of living in a place that is foreign to them, despite, you know, the challenges they face in trying to set up their own sort of businesses or their own, you know, their own,
trying to build a new life here, I suppose.
Exactly. Their own lives. Their own lives. Yeah. Exactly.
I think, it's certainly something which we've explored on the show before about how therapeutic making things can be and sharing your stories can be, and speaking up, which is obviously the name of Speak Up Radio. So sharing stories is something that we think is also really important. While you were talking, it also struck me that art can be really helpful in getting people to what you were saying, like connect in a real way. So often, even if you are somebody who is, you know, very sympathetic with, you know, refugees and migrants, often things can be quite factual. They can be like about numbers and about, you know, things like that. Whereas with something like art, you are connecting on a sort of, you're connecting on an emotional level, a sort of person-to-person level, and it does make it a lot more real. So I think for both the producer of the art, like sharing their story can be really important, and for the person listening to the art, I think that that is also really helpful. Now, I have one other question that's sort of linked to this. So obviously a lot of people who might be coming here might have had quite difficult experiences where they were living before or travelling to the UK. I wondered how you approach people who've maybe had traumatic experiences and how you encourage them to sort of think about those in terms of art, whether that's something you actively encourage. Do you let people do it in their own time? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so we are just here to listen. Mm-hmm. We listen, we take in what somebody is saying, we observe how they want to perhaps go about. And like I said, we're facilitators. So we are there to listen. We hear what they're saying and perhaps, you know, find a nugget within what they're saying and ask them if this is something that they would like or something that they would, you know, want to pursue. Mm. And through that, we find connections with other people and we connect them, and I think most of it is about giving these people a sense of belonging and a sense of inclusion. So I think just listening actively and, you know, having this active, meaningful engagement is what helps people to decide whether they would like to continue doing something or whether they don't feel like they can share what they have. And you know, it really depends on the individual. We're just there to encourage people to, you know, look after their well-being and also realize that it's our responsibility to look after also our own well-being. So leading through example as well.
That's such a good point. Yeah, so thanks, Samara. Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all of that with us. How can people who are interested find out more?
You can find us on our website, which is gisapna.com. It is Q-I-S etna.com, Kisetna. And we are also on LinkedIn, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, so we're on different social media platforms. And we also have a few events that are coming up. So, for example, today we have, we're leading an event with the Bosch Alumni Network, which is called Diversity in Practice. And through that, we are showing why diversity is important and whether we are actually practicing this in our lives and in our working spaces, which, you know, really relates and resonates with what we talked about today. And also, we are opening Maya Yusuf is launching a new album called Finding Home. And she is a Syrian musician who plays on a 78-string instrument called a kanun.
Wow.
And so she is going to be launching her new album in Bradford on Avon, and we are helping her to do that. So we are actually opening the show, and that is on the 26th and 27th of March in Bradford on Avon, and you can find it online. And yeah, it would be great if anybody listening would be able to join.
That sounds really, really exciting. So I'll make sure to give them a shout out a little bit closer to the time as well. So that's so good. Thanks, Amira. Now, you've got a clip for us to play. So I was thinking maybe, so we don't keep you for too long, you could explain the clip to us and tell us a bit about it now. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. So the clip is about Maya Yusuf. So it's an interview with Maya, who is hailed as the queen of the kanun, which, like I said, it's a 78-stringed plucked zither, so an instrument. And her music is rooted in Arabic classical tradition, but it also foregoes the path into jazz, Western classical music, and also flamenco styles.
Brilliant.
So this is an interview with her. It's about 9 minutes long.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, thank you, Humaira, so much for coming on the show. It's been so interesting talking to you. Hopefully, we'll get you or someone from Kisetna back, and we'll sort of explore all of these different things around heritage, mental health, art, connection, in even more detail. So thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything you'd like
thank
to
you
say?
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, brilliant. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with? Any thoughts which you wanted to share before you go?
Yeah, the thought that I would like to leave you with is, what can you do today that will create a ripple of kindness?
That's very nice. Yeah, that's a great challenge. That's a great challenge. All right, thank you, Humaira.
Thank you so much.
All right, you take care. Hello, Future Luke here once again, thanking you for tuning into this episode of Speak Up Radio's podcast. We have included a link to this interview with Maya Yusuf in the show notes, so please do check it out. Thank you so much for listening. You can get in touch with us by emailing into speakup@advocacyproject.org.uk or texting into 074 183 626 83. We do really appreciate your feedback, so please do get in touch if you have any thoughts you would like to share.